The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hi, this is Kevin McCullough. Thanks for listening to the Christian Outlook podcast, where we cover today's issues from a perspective that honors your Christian faith. Our podcast is brought to you through a partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy and ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. Here's another piece I trust you'll enjoy.
Hey, thanks for being with us. Andy Masick is with us. Andy's the president, the CEO of the Heinz History Center. And we're on the set right now of the Fred Rogers exhibit at the History Center. Yeah. Andy, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's good to be with you. And I'm so glad you're here at the History Center.
I know. We came to your place for the first time. Well,
it's about time.
I know. We've been with you for maybe 5 years.
Yeah.
And you've always come to the studio.
I know it. They usually have these headphones on. They're in this little cramped booth. But now we're at the Heinz History Center, which is, in fact, the largest history museum in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and a proud affiliate of the Smithsonian.
Nice.
Very nice. So, Andy, what are we looking at here?
Well, you know, this is the original set from Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. These sets were made in 1968.
Wow.
And some of them are put together with, like, baling wire and chewing gum and paper mache because they figured, what, do we have to get a year out of these?
I see.
You know, 18 months,
so they
maybe.
Never thought. They had no idea.
33 years?
That it would,
no.
Okay.
They had no idea.
All right. So when I look back here, it looks like it could fall apart at any time.
It does look like it, but it's our curators have reassembled it exactly the way it was. So Mr. Rogers walked through that very wooden door,
wow,
came down those two steps,
wow,
sat on that bench right there, changed his shoes, put his jacket in that closet right there.
All those times.
I mean, this is the real deal. This is,
wow,
history.
This is Americana, right?
Yeah. It really is.
Holy smokes.
You know, people come from all over the world, actually, to pay homage to Fred Rogers and Mr. Rogers' mm-hmm. neighborhood. They come here, and we're treating these objects as artifacts. And they'll see the tree of X the Owl.
Right.
They'll see the castle.
And Henrietta Pussycat.
Oh, and don't forget Henrietta.
Right.
Wait, but do you know why they called X the Owl X?
No.
No, I don't know.
Do you know? It's because he escaped from the Pittsburgh Zoo.
Is that true? Or did
that
you make
is
that up?
Absolutely true. I would not make
and
up
and she
something
was trying
like
to tell on him, but all she could say was meow, 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 meow.
That's right.
And so no one knew what she was saying.
He escaped. So we have King Friday the 13th's castle because he's the king of the neighborhood of make-believe,
right,
the land of make-believe. And we're in a special area of the History Center that's dedicated to neighborhoods. We have paintings done by Ron Donahue.
Which are beautiful.
Of 90 neighborhoods.
Really beautiful.
Yeah. And then we have ethnic neighborhoods of Pittsburgh. You can go to the Irish neighborhood, the Carpatho-Rusyn neighborhood, the African-American neighborhood, and see artifacts from that community. So it's altogether fitting that Mr. Rogers' neighborhood should be here. And yeah, it's magical. It's make-believe.
Yes.
But here it is, tangible. So people can come in from all over the world, and I'll tell you, there are people with tears in their eyes.
I bet that's true.
Because they grew up with
yeah,
Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
So, Andy, talk about what we're looking at here. I mean, it's amazing to see the original set. I mean, the door, it's an iconic piece of history.
And it's pretty flimsy, because they whomped this up in the QED studios. And they really didn't expect it to last. And they were experimenting as they went because nobody had really done a kid's show
right,
like this before.
Right.
Fred starts out in 1954 when WQED actually begins. And the station manager, Dorothy Daniel, had a launch party for the cast and crew. And she gave each of them a special gift she had chosen for them. And she gave Fred a little puppet. It was a striped tiger. And he loved that puppet and used it on the very first episode of the Children's Corner show, okay. They called it. And they had a clock that didn't have any hands on it. Yeah. And so it was a cuckoo clock, and a bird was supposed to come out of the back and tell you, you know, it's 3 o'clock. Well, he decided he would use this little striped tiger, whom he named Daniel after Dorothy Daniel.
Is that right? Yeah. And that's where Daniel Striped Tiger came from.
It all started there. And he stuck Daniel through the clock, and Daniel said what time it was. Because in the land of make-believe, you don't really need to know what time it is.
Sure.
So you got a tiger and a clock, he'll just tell you.
I see. So the show started locally in 1966, but then it went nationwide later?
Yeah, in 68, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood really takes on a life of its own. And people around the country started gravitating to it. Because think about what America was like in 1968.
Right. Wow.
I mean, the Tet Offensive in
so
Vietnam.
Much. Martin Luther King.
Bobby
Kennedy.
Kennedy. I mean, it seemed like the world was coming apart
right.
at the seams. And so kids were, they didn't know everything that was going on, but they sensed their parents' anxiety
uh-huh.
and stress. And when they came home from school, they needed a calm, safe place. And they found that in Mr. Mm-hmm. Rogers' Neighborhood. And so these sets are the home.
Homey.
Yeah.
Right.
For a whole generation, yeah. for multiple generations of
yeah.
American kids.
Yeah. Now, I feel like I was in the sweet spot of the Mr. Rogers audience. I grew up every single day loving Fred Rogers.
No kidding.
So when I came in and saw the set for the first time, I got a little choked up. It is such a sweet memory yeah. to be a little kid and to feel like he's inviting yeah. you into a very special secret time.
Yeah. Wait a second. So I'm different.
It's going to be really safe.
Because when I see this, and I think of Eddie Murphy on Saturday Night Live, which is a whole different
right.
generational switch.
Yeah, a spoof right. on Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
But, you know, here, when Joanne Rogers came in and saw the set yeah. here, you know, it was all very familiar to her. But then she saw our lifelike figure of Fred. And, you know, we're the People Museum here at the Heinz History Center. So we have these lifelike representations of people
yeah.
from the past. And we have Mr. Rogers sitting here right next to us,
right.
sitting on the very bench that he sat on, tying on
yeah.
his sneakers. Remember, he always took off his street shoes and
oh, yeah.
put on his sneakers.
My single favorite part.
And Joanne, you know, gasped
really?
When she saw Fred sitting there, because they're pretty lifelike,
yeah.
These figures. But it reminds you how human he was, how ordinary in some ways he was, and yet how special he was to America. And think about this, too. That sweater, you know, that cardigan sweater that he's famous for. In the early years of the show, his mother knitted those sweaters.
No.
Yeah, they weren't machine-made.
No
kidding.
They were
hand-knitted.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, he was a
regular
guy. I mean,
that's so different from what TV is now.
Yeah,
it's hard. It
right.
feels like that would be 150 years ago.
Yeah, it does seem like a different era. But think about this. 1954, when WQED starts, well, that's the infancy of television.
Television, right.
You know, a decade before, there wasn't any such thing as television. It grew very fast. And Fred Rogers was among the early pioneers of the medium. You know, radio had been around since the 1920s.
Sure.
But television is a post-World War II invention. And so the people who were doing the Children's Corner at mm-hmm. WQED
right, right.
or Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, they were inventing
things. They were like pioneers,
things.
Right,
yeah.
right.
Yeah. Let's try this. What if we did music? What if
yeah.
we had Speedy Delivery ride a bicycle onto the set? You know?
Okay, so speaking of.
Yeah.
Okay, so Speedy Delivery.
We have, you know, Mr. McFeely, Speedy Delivery, was named for Fred McFeely Rogers. Fred's mother's maiden name was McFeely.
Huh.
And that's why it's Mr. McFeely. So Mr. McFeely, David Newell, really couldn't ride a two-wheeler, you know? But Fred,
stop it.
No, I swear, you can ask him. And Fred got him this bicycle, and he was going to be the postman, right. The delivery man. So he was supposed to ride into the set, and they built this beautiful oak tree where right. X the sure. owl hooted.
And Henrietta Pussycat.
And Henrietta was there,
like you
too.
Always keep forgetting
Yeah,
her.
I know. And Mr. McFeely, Speedy Delivery, was supposed to come around the backside of the oak tree and stop on a mark and talk to Fred. Well, he was wobbling, you know, trying to steer this thing, and he crashed into the oak arm of the tree, broke it off. You know, this is paper mache
and
baling wire. And Fred must have let loose with they spent a week making that tree. He probably let loose with a pshaw or something,
like,
you know.
Something really
Yeah,
forceful.
Really. And the next day, there was a three-wheeled bicycle on the set. And
we're not going to do that again.
Nope. They patched up the tree. I'll show you where they patched it. And
they didn't make a new tree.
They
didn't have time or money.
They got out their chewing gum put it on there and repainted it. But David Newell told me this story. But those are the kinds of things. They were just kind of making it up as they went along. But, you know, it wasn't like it was all seat of the pants stuff, too, because Fred wrote those songs. He was a talented composer
and pianist.
He was a poet. It took hours and hours, days and days to prepare scripts for this.
Really?
It isn't just, let's just make it up as we go.
Right.
Yeah, they were experimenting. But it was carefully calculated. And the themes they came up with to help kids with things like bullying and divorce and race and all these things.
And violence. Danger, right.
Which were revolutionary conversations for the time.
They absolutely were. And they're still with us today.
I see.
The kids still need that kind of help and advice and guidance.
Right.
But Fred was on the leading edge of this stuff. And he worked it into a program in such a way that kids didn't know they were learning life lessons. They just knew that they were having a good time in their friend and neighbor's neighborhood.
So, Andy, we talked a little earlier before you joined us about Fred thought that the space between him on one side of the camera and that space where the kids were watching as somehow sacred space. So this is sacred space. So what about that? The shows were not necessarily produced live. Everything, as you said, was very carefully choreographed and scripted. It wasn't as though these were produced for 30 minutes and put on the air. This was something that was very intentionally put together, psychologically, spiritually. The whole tone was very effective.
That's right. And, you know, this was his pulpit. In a way.
Yeah,
he was an ordained minister. Went to the Pittsburgh Theological Seminary. And this was his flock, the people on the other side of the camera. He always, it seems to me, he saw those people.
Yeah.
You know, there are people on television who read the news or who act. And I'm not sure that they really see those people the other side of the camera. Fred somehow had the ability to get into our hearts and to see the people on the other side, just as, I think I see
there
you.
There are a couple of people. Yeah. I think it was his big philosophy, his worldview of life that made him able to do that. In fact, when he was graduating from the seminary, he was going to go to a church, and then they were like, wait a minute, maybe you're ordained. You should be ordained for something different.
Yeah, mission field is children's television.
Yeah. I think he did have a much bigger vision for the number of people he wanted to reach, the kind of people he wanted to reach. Yeah. He wanted to reach children.
I see.
And make a difference. And to have a children's ministry, that was like a brand new idea in that time. We hear that term all the time.
Right, now it's
today.
Regular, right.
Fred Rogers practically invented it.
Wow. So, Andy, what we see here, a piece of the set, but the fact of the matter is Fred's legacy is so big and people want a piece of that. The estate, in some ways, is spread out over different people are holding this, right? There's a place in Latrobe where this place is, of the museum.
Some of the puppets are there, but the main set pieces are here at the Heinz History Center. We have more in storage that we're conserving right now. That's just a fancy name museum people use for restoring old things. Yeah. It's conserving them because we don't want to spruce them up and make them look new. We just want to preserve them as they are, with all their flaws and you know imperfections, but we don't want them to deteriorate.
I see.
So that's what we do here at the History Center. A great thing though has just occurred with Tom Hanks making a major motion picture about Fred Rogers.
There's this whole rejuvenation of excitement about Mr. Rogers.
It's fantastic.
Everyone wants to talk about him, which is why we're here.
And Hanks's team came here to the History Center.
Wow.
They measured every piece in this collection. I mean, down to the millimeter.
Really?
They matched up paint colors so exactly. I mean, it's a phenomenal amount of work.
Andy, so show us what we're looking at here. I mean, this is the iconic tree on the set of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
This is X the Owl's tree, the old oak tree. Who else was in
Henrietta Pussycat.
Huh. Henrietta was in here.
Meow, 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 meow.
And remember, this is the tree that Speedy Delivery crashed into first time he rode a two-wheeler on the set and then broke off this arm of the tree. And Fred was, oh, my goodness, all that work down the drain. That's when he got Mr. McFeely, the three-wheeler that we all associate
safety
with Speedy
first.
Delivery. Yeah. But, you know, in this very space here in the Neighborhoods exhibit at the History Center, the press junket, the official press junket for Tom Hanks' new movie, Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
Which comes out on the 22nd.
That's right. It's going to be right in this space. So there are going to be reporters from all over the world here. They'll be doing interviews with cast and crew. And they'll get a close-up look at the original sets from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood that were the inspiration for the sets that were in the movie.
And I bet they're going to be as surprised as I am. And I don't know if you can see where you are, those of you who are watching, but the tree looks like the three of us could have put it together.
With paper mache, it's
not the kind of TV set we're used to seeing anymore.
It's fragile.
Yeah, it really is. And that makes it all the more remarkable that it's survived 50 years when they figured, you know, we only need this for a season or so. So that's why people come from all over the world to see these things. They're iconic pieces of our past, because we grew up with them.
And so, Andy, people talk about the Smithsonian essentially being America's attic, and in connection with the Smithsonian, the Senator John Heinz History Center, this is Pittsburgh's attic.
It really is. Yeah. Matter of fact, this whole exhibit area focuses on the neighborhoods of Pittsburgh. So you can come in and see things associated with the ethnic communities that really made up Pittsburgh.
Right.
And that was one of the things that Fred talked about on his show. He said, you know, we're all different, but that's okay.
Right.
And when he put his feet in a bowl of water with an African-American postman, he was saying, hey, look, there's nothing to be afraid of if you're with someone who looks different.
Right. And when I was a kid and saw that, that didn't seem like a big deal to me because Mr. Rogers normalized it.
Exactly.
You know, now that I'm older and I look back, I think of what an amazing moment that was and how terrific it was that it was on television and that was something that he envisioned. But at the time, I just thought, oh, look, these are two friends.
This is what
they do.
Nobody else was talking about.
And
he changed a generation.
Yeah.
I mean, the kids like who grew up with him, they incorporated those values, those ideals into their lives.
So that's the responsibility of television. That I feel like was lost with Mr. Rogers. I mean, do you think we still have that?
We need Mr. Rogers.
Well, you know, there's a Mr. Rogers company that makes Daniel Tiger cartoons. And a whole new generation is coming up with the values of Mr. Rogers, even though Mr. Rogers himself isn't there. His characters live on. And so that little Daniel Tiger puppet that Dorothy Daniel gave to Fred on the launch party of the first show, well, now he's taken on a new digital life and kids who never saw Mr. Rogers, who don't know anything about the original show, are now channeling Mr. Rogers through Daniel Tiger.
Right, like new Mike's little boy, Dr. J, loves that show.
Right, yeah, right.
Right, even though Mike, when he was a kid, loved this show.
Right. Yes.
So let me just say that I grew up in an H.J. Hines family. My mom and my dad met at Hines.
Yeah.
My aunt and uncle met at Hines. When I walk through here, I feel I'm at the company picnic.
It's
from
the
like
DNA.
1980. You know, they have so much stuff here.
And this is the 150th anniversary, 2019.
Yeah.
1869, 150th anniversary of the H.J. Hines Company.
Wow.
And we have
a terrific display.
Big,
it's a huge exhibit over there.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. But the reason we're here in the Mr. Rogers section is because on November 22nd, the Tom Hanks film, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, yeah. will premiere nationwide. And of course, the press will gather here the day before with Andy so that they can be here amongst all the original artifacts.
Yeah, It really is a special setting for that press junket because the film company measured every set here and replicated it exactly.
That's so neat.
And so for the press people from around the world, they're going to be kind of in, it's kind of hallowed ground.
Sure,
yeah, sure.
Mr. Rogers' Neighborhoods.
Yeah, right.
As close as you'll get to the real thing.
Okay, so speaking of hallowed ground,
yeah.
look where we are.
Well, this is the real deal.
It's King Friday the 13th's castle. There's King Friday up there. But this is made of paper mache and cardboard and egg crates. And this was one of the greatest conservation challenges because you can see it's kind of sagging.
It's kind of like, I don't know if you can see, but it's like falling apart, kind
yeah.
of.
Mm-hmm. And it's pink and turquoise
right.
or teal. I'm not sure what color that is.
But Andy, like you said, it wasn't meant for the decades.
No.
It was meant for the moment.
They felt like if we got a year out of this set, that would be great.
I see.
And
oh.
so they kept cobbling it together. But our conservators have done a pretty good job stabilizing it, but it just can't be moved again.
Wow.
And right next to it are some of the original puppets, including Grandpère Tiger,
Daniel Tiger's grandfather.
I think he's Daniel Tiger's grandfather, yeah. but he lived in the Eiffel Tower.
Right. He was from the French side of the family.
Yeah, the French side of the family.
They're a little snooty.
We actually have the Eiffel Tower. It's undergoing conservation treatment right now. Yeah.
Okay, so if you come in here to the Senator John Hines History Center, they have picture a little bit to the right of where we are, and you can see when it goes into the neighborhood of make-believe, there's the Eiffel Tower right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that's right. So we love being the home for Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood here, and it's great that the film is coming out to introduce a new generation
sure.
to
well,
Fred Rogers.
That must make you feel special because you're guarding all the original stuff that Fred Rogers put together in his head before it actually turned into what we see.
Right. I think that we are a repository for memories here at the History Center, and we want people to see themselves in the exhibits and in the artifacts that we have here, and that's why we have the Neighborhoods of Pittsburgh. But when you get to Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, everybody was in that living room. Everybody was with King Friday the 13th. Everybody knew X the Owl. And so it's a homecoming when you come here.
So, Andy, there are things that are in right now being sort of cleaned a little bit or altered by the conservationists here.
Talk to us
about that. There's a group of people, this is their full-time job.
That's right. You know, we in the museum, we have curators who kind of do the research, study, they become content experts. Mm-hmm. And then there are collections managers and registrars. They're the ones who keep track of everything. They know where everything is and they oversee conservation. Conservators are the people who actually do the restoration work. They fix things, they repair things, but they don't try to make them look new again. They just try to stabilize them so they don't deteriorate. So it's okay for us to see a little age on things.
Sure.
Right now, we're in the same area where we're standing. There's George Washington's hair.
Whoa.
Actually,
it.
A little...
It.
clump of his hair.
It's really? Kind of with, creepy.
Yeah. And
I can use some.
And what color was his hair?
Red, auburn.
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
It was a deep auburn
color. The white
color.
Thing. Yeah. It was an act.
Yeah. And then right over there, we have 150-year-old pickles and 150-year-old ketchup that were
not
found.
Not for sampling.
No, you can't sample it. And they're in a refrigerator because they were found 45 feet under a cornfield in Kansas City on board a Pittsburgh-built steamboat that sank in 1856.
Wow.
So because it was in an anaerobic environment, no oxygen down there, and a constant temperature of about 50 or 60 degrees, when they were excavated, we put them right into a refrigerator.
Oh,
and so you can see 150-year-old ketchup.
All
here behind
history. It doesn't
look good,
the 150-year-old ketchup.
It separates a little bit,
shaky.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. It's a little
shaky. You know how you want to shake up your ketchup before you just
for a long
throw
time.
It right on those fries? Okay. Yeah, I would do this for like 5 minutes.
All right, Andy, let's talk about Fred Rogers the person.
Yeah.
I think that is the thing that interests John and I the most, is how he was able to take an impersonal medium, like television, and make it ultra personal.
Yeah.
I mean, as a kid, I felt like he was my friend, and I felt like I was his friend. I mean, there's just something magical about how he did that I've never seen in any other television personality. So, now you met Fred.
Yeah, I met Fred, and instantly my stress levels went down.
Is that right?
I mean, just being in his presence. He had a way of looking you in the eye and show you that he was really listening to you and that he cared about you. And you know, stress just fell away. But the people that he was most connected to were children. For some reason, he was like a kid whisperer.
Yes.
Wow. Instantly related to kids. And if there were kids in a room with adults, he immediately left the adults and turned his attention to the kids.
So it wasn't just an act for TV. It was the real thing.
It wasn't an act. Matter of fact, when he was on the Oprah Winfrey show once, he asked, you know, are there going to be kids in the audience? And he was sure, no, there aren't going to be any kids. You know, this is an adult program. And he said, okay, I just wanted to make sure, because if there are kids present, you know, I'm going to talk to the kids. And it turned out that some moms brought kids and they were in the front row, and Oprah started an interview with them, and they started out a regular kind of interview talking about adult things, and then he saw those kids in the front row and he got up and went over to them, and the producers were saying, oh no, what's happening? You know, we're losing control. Should we go to commercial? And he engaged those kids. It was compelling television.
It's Mr. Rogers being Mr. Rogers live.
Absolutely.
Right?
And he was the real deal. Yeah. He wasn't acting.
Wow. Oh, that's
he was relating to those kids. And Oprah's team didn't necessarily know how to cope with that.
But he didn't care either.
He didn't care. Those kids were the most important people in the room.
Wow. Yeah. So in some ways, Fred sort of defies the celebrity age that we live in now.
Yeah.
And of course, when you look at Fred and you read about Fred and you think about this was a good and holy man, in the age we live in now, we always want to turn things on their head.
We need to find out the hidden story, that thing that they did years ago, so that we can find that they're really hateable.
So people always say, well, tell us the dark and dirty side of Fred Rogers. And the fact of the matter is, there really wasn't the dark and dirty side. The urban myths of Fred are plentiful,
okay.
Right?
So I'm at the mall last night, and I struck up a conversation about Fred Rogers with several people. I was sitting on a bench, and this woman turned to me, Andy, I wanted to ask you this, and she said, I heard Fred Rogers was covered with tattoos, but they covered them up on TV so no one could know. Is that true?
You know, there's all kinds of urban legend and myth surrounding Fred Rogers.
Yes.
And because no one, or people just can't believe he was so honest, so good, so sincere, and so they started making up things about him. And with the advent of the internet, of course, all this stuff gets propagated.
Sure.
But was he a trained sniper with 13 kills? Was he
is that a
rumor? It's a rumor. Was he a Navy SEAL? You know, trained to kill with his bare hands. You know, did he have tattoos all over his body? All of that's hooey. You know, it's
make believe. So no tattoos, no sniper.
No, death with his bare hands as a Navy SEAL. He was a swimmer, however. He swam.
And a daily swimmer.
Every day.
Yeah.
At the Pittsburgh Athletic Club, he would swim religiously, and he stayed in shape. And
yeah.
I don't know if you ever noticed it. He was proud that he was the same weight.
Yeah, the same weight.
143.
Yeah.
Right.
Over 30 years. And he always looked trim and, light on his
Now, feet. I don't know if you know the answer to this, but I also read that he suffered with obesity as a child.
I had heard that he was chubby as a kid,
yeah.
And I think he suffered some bullying.
Yeah.
And that may have shaped his personality
and
character.
And his commitment to exercise, maybe, and his, the importance of him being, thin and trim and
That's
healthy.
Right.
And
That's right.
If anything, he was consistent, wasn't he? 143 throughout your adult life, that says an awful lot
Isn't
about the man.
Now, I'm sure Joanne Rogers could tell us some stories about Fred. But, when I've talked to her, there's nothing that needs to be hidden.
There's
none of this fantastic stuff that you see
Excellent.
On the internet.
Okay, Andy, so the movie premieres on the 22nd, mm-hmm. A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. But this exhibit at the Heinz History Center will be here for the foreseeable future.
That's right. It's a permanent installation. In fact, we're hoping to build a new wing that will expand on Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, and we'd love to recreate the whole set
just as it once was.
So that's our dream over the next 2 years.
Excellent. So take a moment, and as we leave, tell us all about the History Center and invite people to come on down.
Well, we do have 150,000 square feet of exhibits here. It is the largest history museum in Pennsylvania and a proud affiliate of the Smithsonian.
Very nice.
It's beautiful.
Well,
beautiful
it's
place.
In an old ice warehouse,
yeah, a seven-story
brick building that once stored ice that was cut on the northern lakes in the wintertime. The Ice Company warehouse. And that's the ice that went into your ice box in the homes of Pittsburgh. But today, you can see the Western Pennsylvania Sports Museum. You can see a large exhibit on the history of innovation here in Western Pennsylvania. You can learn about the French and Indian War. We have art galleries, a glass gallery. Pittsburgh's first industry was glass before it was iron or steel. We have a compelling exhibit called From Slavery to Freedom, about the African-American experience in Western Pennsylvania. And on this floor, you can learn more about the neighborhoods of Pittsburgh.
Terrific. It's a beautiful setup here.
I love it because grandparents come in with their grandkids and they say, where's our stuff? Where's our stuff?
Yeah.
And they mean our Irish stuff, our German stuff,
our
Russian stuff, our Polish stuff. And so we say,
there better be a pierogi in here somewhere.
It's over here. We have a giant pierogi in the sports museum. Yeah.
We have a giant pierogi.
Oh, yeah. So
John and I are stopping at the pierogi on our way out.
And right now, on the first floor in the McGuinn Gallery, we have A Very Merry Pittsburgh. It's an exhibit about the holiday traditions in Western Pennsylvania over the last 150 years.
Wow. Well, Andy, thanks an awful lot. I mean,
it's so good to be with you. It's good to be in your space.
Thanks for coming to my house.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for being with us. We've enjoyed our time with Andy Macek, the president, the CEO of the Senator John Heinz History Center. And so join us here, won't you please?
Thanks for listening to Christian Outlook. Our program is coming to you today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. If you enjoy our podcast, take a moment and tell a friend to subscribe today.